Why is this microphone screen so dusty? Did it fall on the floor and someone just... Gee. All right. Never a dull moment. Okay, here we go. How you doing, Reg? Good? Good. All right. What do you say we get started here, huh, my friend? Good. All right. Put it in the books here, 422. Let me just write down a little note here for myself about what I want to talk about here. You know, the script, of course, Reggie, always very, sometimes I'll add some little addendums to the script, but, you know, the show is very scripted, very scripted. All right, you ready to go, my friend? Good. Get the trigger finger ready. Star, smile, strong. All right, let's see how tight you can make this one, Reggie. You ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Ah, yeah, we missed it. Ready to go? Try it again. 3. I'm sorry. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Whoa, what's going on? Is it firing right away now? Oh, look at that. Okay, all right, let's adjust. Let's adjust. Let's see. Here we go. Take 3. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. All right, whatever happens, happens. Are you ready? 4 is enough. Here we go. 3, 2, this is be taken out in editing. I understand that, but it's just funny. It was firing right away when we didn't want it to, and then when we wanted to, it didn't. Okay, here we go. Whatever happens, happens. We're going with it. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, your listening on a weekly basis is much appreciated, but so is your effort to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget to go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and then stand back and prepare for an onslaught of podcasts beyond your wildest dreams. Just keep scrolling down and loading more, scrolling down and loading more. We've been doing this since May of 2016. There's a lot of podcasts for you to listen to if you're not up to date. So get there, find out where we've been so you know where we're going. Right now, we're going full steam ahead with episode number 422. So, interesting controversy that's been in the news of late that is somewhat, well, I mean, it is to some extent sports oriented, but I think it has bigger ramifications. It's starting in sports, but as everything in today's world is, it's a controversy or an issue starts in one small area and then seems to grow and take on bigger societal proportions. And that's what seems to be happening here. Whether you're a sports fan or not, I hope that you are aware of what's been going on in women's professional basketball, because it really is a once in a generation thing as it stands right now.
This is historical. What's going on right now in the WNBA? There's some people out there that might not even know that there's a professional women's basketball league, which is part of my point. If you haven't been aware, the fact is it's been around for, I think, 25 years or something. So it's been around quite a while. But there's no question that in the last several decades, women's sports of all kind, professional, college, high school, grammar school, have taken on much bigger profiles, much more participation, and has taken on much more importance. And women's sports of all kind are now getting covered more regularly in the media, it being discussed on sports radio stations. As I said, the participation is going up. The skill level is going up as all these sports attract more people. Certainly women's sports in college have the profile and the quality and the attention it's gotten over the last 10 or 15 years. When you look at things like lacrosse or soccer or softball or baseball, things like that, basketball, obviously, more women, young women, young girls at a young age beginning to not only participate in sports, but for the first time in a long time can actually look at professional sports as a career path. For many years, for up until, as I said, I would say the last 25 at least, the league started to play in the WNBA, just for your facts here, almost 30 years ago, 1997. So we're inching on almost the 30-year mark. But for a while, women's sports in high school and in college were treated somewhat as second class as compared to the boys' sports. Now there's a question. It hasn't been completely stemmed in anti-feminist or pro-male dominance. You have to understand that sports in general is a business like anything else. And the business that draws attention and ultimately draws money is the one that gets the most attention and gets the most prestige. That's the way things are in a capitalistic society, and in most societies, we go for the shiny object. And so, for years, men's sports have been dominant because men's sports have not only been available, but have brought in billions, not millions. Billions of dollars. Right now, most television contracts for the major men's sports in the United States all carry a several billion dollar price tag, the rights to televise men's sports. As I've said before, there's always been men's sports. For the last 40 or 50 years, there's always been an LPGA, a ladies' professional a golf association, but it's never been as popular as the PGA with the men play. As I said, there's a professional women's basketball league that's been around for 30 years, but I would venture to say that until the last year or so, I don't think a lot of people realized that there was a team. And if they did, it was something that they may have been aware of, but they never even watched a game and certainly never went to a game. As I said, though, now in the last 15 years, 20 years or so, women's soccer, especially worldwide and the United States, high profile. Women's softball, we've seen professional women's softball teams. As I said, women's sports have been around. They've taken a back seat because men's sports have been so prominent and so dominant, and they've made money That's where that's you know, follow the money. In the great film All the President's Men, the way Watergate was basically uncovered was that Deep Throat told Bernstein and Woodward to follow the money. And that's pretty much the way things work. And so certainly men's sports have always been dominant. And there's been some misogyny involved in that. I'm not denying that. But at the same time, also, the men's sports have been dominant because the male athletes have been dominant. Now, we've seen in the last several years, for instance, Serena Williams, one of the best athletes of all time, one of the best, if not the best, tennis player of all time, going back to the 70s. You know, Billie Jean King and Chris Evert and Martina Navratilova. Not just great women athletes, great athletes. If you ever look at the Billie Jean King story, you'll see not only a great athlete, regardless of being a man or a woman, a great athlete, but you will also see how she fought tirelessly and continues to fight tirelessly for women's rights, for equal pay in terms of purses or payment and in tournaments. Now, once again, the argument that had always come back to her is that, well, the men's tournament draws more people in the stands. The men's tournament draws more advertising dollars. The men's tournament draws more, you know, merchandise. And so that's the reason why. And we're seeing now that that things are beginning to even up. They're not close to being even, but at the same time, to be fair, men's sports still draw much more than women's sports in terms of college and especially in the pros. But that's changing. And it's changing especially in the last couple of years. And how do I know this? Well, not only do I research it, but I'm just going on my own interest. I'm a sports fan. I watch several sports. I can honestly say, and I'm not bragging about this, I'm not a big fan of basketball. I played basketball in grammar school. I was pretty good, and I played freshman year of high school, and I just stopped growing. But you got to be 6'8", right? It's almost a foot taller than me. So I had to face realities. But I played basketball. I was into basketball. There's no question about that. But I'm not a big basketball watcher. I enjoyed participating, but I've never really been a big fan. Now, of course, when Michael Jordan was playing, like everyone else, I became a basketball fan. It was hard not to be a basketball fan when Michael Jordan was playing. I mean, it was there. Aside from it being in Chicago, which I had a personal, you know, connection to, having lived here my whole life. But I would have, if I lived in any city, I would have watched the Bulls and watched Michael Jordan. But the same point, I mean, maybe I wouldn't have, because I never really watched a lot of, I used to watch, you know, some games with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and Dr. J and Isaiah Thomas, but I'm not a huge basketball fan per se. So men's or women's, this is not even a sexist thing. I'm just not that big fan of watching professional basketball. I can honestly say, aside from probably 30 years ago, when it really first came on my radar screen, one once again with a Chicago connection, watching DePaul go into the Final Four with Mark Aguirre, and DePaul had a successful run in the late 70s and early 80s with successful teams. With Ray Meyer coaching them, as I said, Mark Aguirre and Terry Cummings and so many different players. And then once they graduated, they were still a prominent team. But as time went on, DePaul was a small school, and it wasn't really drawing the people that it once did. Joey Meyer took over for his father. They had good teams, but they didn't have great teams. They never came close to matching that great team that Ray Meyer had with Mark Aguirre going to the Final Four. So certainly, I mean, and I remember a good friend of mine was a huge DePaul fan, big basketball fan. He was a basketball coach, in grammar school and high school, and he still coaches in high school. So he really turned me on to college basketball, in the late 70s and early 80s. It was not as big as it is today. Today it is a multi-billion-dollar sport. It was never like that. The Final Four now is a cultural event. You know, the brackets, they have their own show. I know when I talk about some of these things, if there's younger people listening, they must think I sound like I'm 100 years old. I'm not quite there yet, but you have to understand that 40 or 50 years ago, 40 years ago, the Final Four was not as prominent. Right now, it's on the par of the Super Bowl in terms of popularity, in terms of betting. You know, I've talked before about how gambling has increased all sports in terms of interest and popularity, especially legalized gambling now. We have few vices left that aren't legal anymore. As I've said many times, I don't even know if police departments have vice squads anymore, because there's very few vices that aren't legal. but 30 or 40 years ago, about 40 years ago, the Final Four did not have its own show to announce the brackets. It wasn't like that. It's been the last 30 years or even 25 where things have really taken off. So I've never been huge into basketball. Let me just put it that way. And part of it was that the prominence of basketball wasn't that big. It's interesting in the last 40 or 50 years, the way the popularity of sports has shifted. Baseball had always been the great American pastime. It was the number one sport for decades, maybe even 100 years. Football then was number two. Basketball was number three. Hockey was number four. And, I mean, until the 90s or even the 2000s, soccer wasn't even on the radar screen as far as America was concerned, as far as the U.S. was concerned. Certainly in the 70s, Pelé, who was one of the greatest players of all time, helped bring soccer to the United States with the first professional soccer league. But it was a fledgling league, and it really didn't make a huge impact. Oh, I must say that Chicago, back in the late 70s, the Chicago Sting did win a championship. It was the first championship that Chicago had won in decades. But soccer was like the fifth sport in a four-sport world. You know what I mean? It was hardly on the radar screen. It's gaining popularity, no question, when they have the World Cup. That is a big thing. I'm still wondering about the overall popularity of soccer. Will it ever become a major sport? It would have to, I think, at this point, have to overcome hockey, and I don't even think it's close to that right now. But as I said, but what's interesting in the last 35 years or 40 years, certainly in the last 20, we have seen a major shift. And football now, really, because of legalized gambling, has become the country's most popular sport. I would say baseball is number two, but it's a close number two to the NBA. And I think much of that has to be attributed to Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan hasn't played in almost 30 years, but that doesn't matter. What he did to raise the profile and the interest in basketball cannot be underestimated, underplayed, or overlooked. Certainly, players like, as I said, many, you know, Dr. J in the 70s and in the 80s, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, you know, great players, no doubt, and had a major impact on the game. Patrick Ewing, but Michael Jordan still has to be viewed as not only one of the greatest, if not the greatest player, but also one of the greatest assets who heightened the profile of the game. Where I would argue that basketball at this point may be, once again, because of betting as well as interest, I would say that football is number one. Baseball is number two, but it's a close. It's close. I would say baseball and basketball are now, you know, 2A and 2B. I think it's that close. And then there's hockey. And a few years ago, hockey was on the rise, and you could even argue that hockey was inching past basketball. And now hockey seems to have fallen back down a little. Soccer is rising, but I still think that hockey in the United States is still overall more popular as far as people attending the games, as far as interests go, not worldwide. I'm not saying worldwide. There's no question. Soccer most likely is the most popular sport globally. No question. But I'm just talking about the United States. But soccer is certainly moving in that direction. So I mentioned Michael Jordan and how he has elevated and how he elevated the profile of basketball. Michael Jordan didn't only just make the Chicago Bulls one of the greatest teams of all time, but as I said, he rose all boats. He took the game of basketball and raised its profile. Kids started playing basketball for years, for decades. If you went to a park, the baseball fields would be full and the basketball courts would be empty. And in the Michael Jordan era of the late 80s and then certainly into the 90s, you suddenly saw basketball courts filled constantly with kids of all ages and all races, and you went to the parks and you saw the baseball diamonds and they had tumbleweed. Nobody was playing baseball. Everybody was playing basketball. Michael Jordan had that kind of influence. He took what was a marginally popular sport and made it into one of the world's most popular sports. And he is still viewed, not just in the United States. I've traveled quite a bit around the world, and I see people today still wearing Michael Jordan jerseys in Europe. As I said, he was on the Bulls. You know, that was almost 30 years ago now for the second three-peat. And they're still wearing 23 jerseys around the world. Michael Jordan is a global superstar, and he elevated the league as well as himself. And ask any player who played during the Michael Jordan era, while there may have been jealousy and dislike because he got so much attention and he was winning all these championships and he was getting all the endorsements and he was making, you know, movies and he was, you know, just accolades upon accolades upon accolades. I'm sure, you know, don't forget, professionals, athletes of all kind are very competitive people. They're very jealous people. They don't like to lose. So I'm sure that there was a lot of dislike, and we saw that on the court. The Detroit Pistons and the Chicago Bulls had a very serious and even violent at times rivalry. The Pistons, before the ascent of the Bulls in the late 80s and early 90s, it was the Detroit Pistons who dominated the league, the Bad Boys. And when their crown was being usurped, they did not take it lightly. There's a famous game where the Bulls beat the Pistons in a playoff game, and the Pistons didn't even shake their hands to congratulate them. There was real bad blood there. But my point is, if you ask any basketball player that played during that time now with time with 20 or 30 years, in between, and they're older, and they could look at things now less competitively than they did, and look at it with a more realistic viewpoint, they would have to say that, yeah, Michael Jordan was great for the game because he lifted all boats. He brought such excitement to basketball in general, not just to the Bulls, but everybody in all the different cities, that all the players in the league benefited. Michael Jordan's, certainly was making tens of millions of dollars with contracts and endorsements, but the attention he was bringing to the NBA for years being the third sport, it helped all the other players. Their profiles were raised. Their salaries were raised. Their endorsements were raised. There were now other basketball players also making a name for themselves, getting endorsements. Yes, Michael certainly led all that. There's no question about that. But he broke the barrier in that basketball was becoming one of the major sports now. And what was it doing? As I said earlier, it was commanding attention, and most importantly, it was commanding dollars, attendance, and revenue, ad revenue for the networks, both cable and over the air, who broadcast their games. Michael Jordan elevated the profile of basketball. As I said, talk to any player that played against him and during his era, and while they may have been jealous and they may have been competitive and they may not have liked him and for any other reason, I think if they, in their honest heart of hearts, they would have to agree and have to concede that Michael Jordan helped their careers. He may have won all the championships, but in terms of heightening the other players, heightening the league, bringing more money into it, allowing more endorsements, allowing more higher salaries, Michael Jordan played that role. And so here we are in 2024, and out of nowhere comes one of the best female basketball players in college history, Caitlin Clark, playing for Iowa. And she breaks every record there is in college basketball, and goes to the championship, and just brings a new attention to the game. She had the same kind of impact and influence that Michael Jordan did. She had the Caitlin Clark effect, if you will, raising the profile of NCAA Division I basketball. For years, there was always a women's Final Four, but it was the in college basketball, but it was the men's which dominated. It was the men's that had its own brackets and TV shows. It was the men's that commanded tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, for television rights. And suddenly, this woman basketball player, two-time national player of the year with the Iowa Hawkeyes, all-time leading scorer in NCAA Division I, comes out of nowhere and brings some much-needed attention to women's basketball. It only made sense that as more attention, as I said, over the last several decades, more attention and prestige and emphasis and funding for women's basketball and women's sports on an elementary school or a park district school level, and on high school and then college. As I said before, women's sports were always there, but there was always a glass ceiling. If a woman played sports in high school, for instance, the main goal really was to hopefully get a college scholarship. And then that was pretty much the end of the road. They could have a very successful college career. They could even win championships. But there wasn't a next path like there was in the men's athletic world. So women would be playing sports in high school in the hopes of getting a college scholarship, a free ride. That's a great thing. That takes a great burden off their parents. You get a college scholarship, a free college education for playing sports. It's certainly a motivation. That's certainly a goal. But while there were professional women's leagues after a woman finished and graduated from college, to make a living at it, a real living, would be difficult. Yes, there is professional soccer leagues, and there are professional softball leagues, and there are professional basketball leagues, as I said, the WNBA. But they don't command the money and the attention that the men's leagues did, at least initially. They were there, but they weren't on any par as the men's leagues, until Caitlin Clark comes on the scene, has a three-point shot that can rival any man, and that's where she probably got most of her points. A great, great, three-point shooter. She was an All-American. She led the division in points and assists in her junior year. She was the National Player of the Year. She won the national championship with Iowa. Just a complete player. But here's what's really important. She started to have, as I said before, the Caitlin Clark effect, just like Michael Jordan. She was so good in college that the sports media and sports fans couldn't ignore her anymore and couldn't ignore women's sports. There's a great quote, which I only heard a few years ago, and I have really taken to heart. And I think it's a great piece of philosophy. It's from Steve Martin. Steve Martin was asked, he said, he's been asked many times throughout the years. I never heard this quote. Maybe it's been around. I never heard it. But when I heard it, wow, it registered with me, and it's now top of my head. And I do things in my own life with this advice in mind. That's how much I really give credence to this. And Steve Martin said that people would come up to him and say, how do you make it in show business? How do I make it in show business? And he said, everybody is, waiting for some really, sage advice. I didn't really have anything because it's such a subjective, crazy business. There's no one path in any creative career. There's no path. Like if you're an accountant, if you're going to become an accountant, there's a path to you becoming an accountant. You take accounting courses, you take the CPA exam, and you're an accountant, and then you can go. And there's a pathway. There's a defined pathway that everybody has. That's why so many people say get into accounting, because it has a clear path. If you follow those paths, you can do well. But in a creative world, you're selling yourself. You're selling your talent, and there is no path. And if you talk to 10 people that have risen in any creative world, whether it's art or music or acting or film, whatever it is, you will never hear the same story twice. If you talk to an accountant, you will hear in many cases, you will hear the same story pretty much word for word. I mean, there might be some, you know, differences, but I'm not oversimplifying it here. But my point is, if you talk to anybody in a creative venture, there's no clear established pathway. And so you have this player who comes out of nowhere, who is extremely proficient and is dominating the sport and bringing attention and bringing people in to watch, to spend. That's the key. Money. This year, I believe this is true, the women's Final Four game drew, I don't know if it's as much as the men's, but it was the biggest, you know, viewership in the history. And I don't think I'm overstating that, because of Caitlin Clark. She's brought so much attention to the college, women's college basketball. And so the way they do it, she graduates, and she is a phenom. And this was not handed to her. She broke all these records, winning championships, the highest scorer, assists. She dominated women's basketball the last couple of years. Earned every accolade that she got. Great attention on her because of her performance, of what she did, of what she earned. To the point where you even had not just women supporting the league, you had men. This is how I knew and know that there's something going on here with the WNBA and Caitlin Clark. As I said, I can honestly say, aside from watching DePaul in the Final Four, I don't do the basketball brackets. I'm not a big basketball fan, college or pro. I don't do the brackets. I don't go to bars and with my friends watch the Final Four. I don't think I've ever watched, aside from that DePaul Final Four in the late 70s, I don't think I've ever watched a Final Four game, the championship game. I pay attention to it, who won, but I it's not on my radar screen. Not interested. You know what? This year, I didn't watch the men's Final Four championship game, but I did watch the women's Final Four basketball game from beginning to end. Because I've been reading about Caitlin Clark, and I said, let me watch this game. And so I, like tens of millions of people, sports fans, not just women sports fans, but sports fans. We have got to get away from those monikers too. Sports fans watched the Final Four, women's Final Four, not men's, women's. Caitlin Clark then goes into the draft for the WNBA and naturally is the number one draft pick, gets picked by a team called the Indiana Fever, and now she has begun her WNBA career. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, one of the best teams in the league is the Chicago Sky, and because of their proximity, they are natural rivals, the Indiana Fever and the Chicago Sky, but also because there's always been a little rivalry between Caitlin Clark and other players that were in the women's league at her time. A little jealousy, like in competitiveness, like that happens in every league, men and women. I'd said it before. Any athlete, very competitive, very jealous of other people's success. They want to be number one. That's what gets them there. That's the motivation. But you also have to take a step back and say, I don't want to hate this person because we're all in this together. And if one person can bring attention, that can help us all. This regular season game between the Indiana Fever and the Chicago Sky, regular season game, not a Super Bowl, not a championship game. 23 million people watched it. I watched it again. I don't sit down and watch men's basketball. I have watched now, in the last 3 or 4 months, more women's basketball games in the last 4 or 5 months since the Final Four in March, and now these WNBA games. In the last 3 or 4 months, I've watched more women's basketball in the last 3 or 4 months than men's basketball in the last 30 years. I can honestly say that. Yes, I watched the Michael Jordan era. And after Michael Jordan was done, I stopped watching. <laughs> 23 million people, the biggest viewership for women's basketball in its history in now almost 30 years. So clearly there is a Caitlin Clark effect. Not only did it happen in college basketball, raising that profile, which now will encourage and influence younger women who look up to Caitlin Clark, just the way young people looked up to Michael Jordan. Now there will be young women, young girls in grammar school, in high school, that not only will look to emulate Caitlin Clark and make their high school basketball teams or make their college basketball teams and get a scholarship, but now for the first time in many years, even though this league has been around for almost 30 years, what Caitlin Clark's achievements have done and the attention that she has brought to women's basketball, college and professional, now can give a young woman a legitimate path to say, my career in sports does not have to end in college if I play basketball. Now, this WNBA, there's legitimacy to it. Yes, it's been around, but it's been on the outskirts of professional sports. In the last 20 years, there's been certainly a rise in female empowerment, and so women's activities of all kind have gotten higher prominence. So the WNBA has fallen into that, but the WNBA's attendance and TV ratings were minuscule compared to any other sport, not even just men's basketball, which is one of the, as I said before, one of the most popular, just minuscule. Suddenly, when Caitlin Clark comes to town or she plays a home game, there are full houses to see her. There are arenas filled with 20,000 people suddenly. Whereas before, if you saw the highlights of a WNBA game on the news, you saw a smattering of people watching the games. Now, sellouts. And most impressive, not just women, men coming out to support women's basketball. Say what you will about men, anti-feminists, blah, 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 but men are supporting women's basketball. I'm watching it. So I know that's a fact. I don't even like basketball. I don't watch pro basketball by men. But I've been watching women's basketball because of Caitlin Clark. And so this is a phenomenon that the WNBA should be thankful for, embracing, and finding how to best leverage this to let Caitlin Clark have the same effect on the WNBA that Michael Jordan had on the NBA, raising its profile, raising of the attendance, raising the interest, bringing more fans, male and female, into the tent to watch the games, to attend the games, bringing attention, and then, of course, what follows is bringing the money. As those sellouts continue for her games, the interest in the WNBA, if the league leverages her popularity correctly, can then begin to affect other teams in other cities. It has to start first with her. Yes, she's the draw. So initially, yeah. You're going to have to get used to everybody talking about Caitlin Clark. But take a step back, players. Take a step back, other players, other coaches of other teams, and realize she's bringing people, she's bringing attention, she's bringing eyes to you and to the game. You will benefit from the Caitlin Clark effect. Maybe not right now, not today. It may take some time, but as I said before, talk to anybody who played during the Michael Jordan era, and they will tell you that their salaries jumped, their endorsements jumped because of the attention that Michael Jordan brought to the game. And Caitlin Clark can have and is beginning to have that same effect. But here's a major problem. And it's a problem, unfortunately, that is a part of our society today. This access to information and platforms to tell our opinions on stuff. Yes, I know it's great, and it's freedom of speech, and it's democracy in action, and blah, blah, blah. But my gosh, we've got 330 million critics who are dissecting and analyzing and criticizing every little thing about every person. And so here's Caitlin Clark. As I said before, this is not like, oh, she's not worthy of this attention. No. She's got the stats to back up the attention she's getting. All-time leading scorer in women's basketball. Two-time All-American. Champion. She's got the credentials. The attention she got was not handed to her, was not given to her. She earned it on the court. Unfortunately, because the league, the WNBA, is in great part dominated by African-American players, as much as we talk about diversity in this country, as much as we are trying to make everything equal, we still point out race. And many times, it's not the dominant white group that's bringing it up. It's the other races. So now, Caitlin Clark, a white woman, is embroiled in a controversy with many WNBA players and many African-American WNBA players who are criticizing her, who are targeting her during games with hard, flagrant fouls, almost in a way to injure her. There's a couple of players, one prominent on the Chicago Sky team named Angel Reese, who's been, seems to have been jealous of Caitlin Clark going back to college. And now that they're both in the pros, this has only gotten worse. She just had a terribly flagrant foul, knocking Caitlin Clark in the head on a layup. She says, well, that's basketball. No, I saw it. Yeah, she was going after the ball, but she totally nailed Caitlin Clark in the head. And she was given a flagrant foul. You know, in today's world now, everybody has their own brand. Everybody has to make a name for themselves. And there's no question that Angel Reese is trying to do that. She wears her uniform in a unique way where she's got one side bare arm, the other side with a T-shirt, one side bare leg, the other one with long, kind of leggings on. She's trying to make a brand. That's today's world, whether you like it or not. That's today's. I get that. Okay, fine. But when you're playing the game, and I get her competitiveness. I'm not trying to take away her competitiveness. But there's a difference between competitiveness and jealousy and pettiness and not recognizing what the Caitlin Clark effect can have for other individual players, other individual teams, and for the entire league itself to raise its profile just like Michael Jordan did. But Caitlin Clark now has become this target for racial feelings. There's a woman on The View that said that Caitlin Clark has been given all this attention because of white privilege. Caitlin Clark deserves what she had. She wasn't handed this. It wasn't as if someone said, oh, well, here's a white woman and we're just going to make her the best. We're just going to give her all this attention. No, she earned it. She's the highest scoring player in women's basketball. Black women have been playing women's basketball for years. Hispanic women have been playing basketball, and white women. She happens to be white. She's the biggest, the highest scorer of all time. She won a championship. She's a 2-time All-American. What white privilege did she have? She earned the attention and the accolades that she's getting by her performance, by her hard work, and by her talent. She wasn't handed anything. She's backed it up. She scores 30 points a game. White privilege, if you're going to talk about that, is, oh, well, maybe she's a little pretty, so everybody's all going, giving her and just handing her stuff, like this Olivia Dunn, this gymnast. She's a pretty blonde girl. And so everybody's, she's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. That's white privilege. I'll give you that one. Not Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark has the stats to back up the attention and the transformational attention that she's getting. She's filling up those stadiums, and she's getting people to watch those games on TV, not because she's white. It's because she's a great basketball player. And anybody who calls her out and calls out her race is being racist, whether you're white or African-American, or anything else. She's earned it. And instead of putting her down in discussions, doesn't deserve it, white privilege, oh, she's... And instead of targeting her on the court that you might be injuring her with cheap fouls... I'm not saying you shouldn't be competitive when you play against her. She needs to earn that right now too. That, you know, her college career is past. Now she's got to earn her stripes in the pro league. There's a lot of players that were amazing players in college, men and women, and they couldn't cut the mustard in the pros. There's a huge difference, and she's adjusting. But she's adjusting to the league, and she's still performing well. But there are some players that are so jealous of her. Clearly, this is not about competition. They're hiding themselves with the competition excuse, but it's petty jealousy. Instead of realizing that the attention that Caitlin Clark is bringing to the WNBA for the first time since it's in existence in 1997 is an amazing asset. It's a phenomenon that
every team and every player should embrace. You shouldn't give her a walk. I'm not saying you should give her an easy time, but you shouldn't be targeting her physically, and you shouldn't be condemning her and bringing up race when this woman has achieved legitimately. She wasn't handed anything. She earned what she's got on the court with the stats to back it up. And so I'm watching now every game, all this discussion, and every time a new game comes out, something else happens. And I don't understand. If I was the commissioner of the WNBA, the commissioner's name is Kathy Engelbert. Now, this is not, she is a smart woman. She played college basketball. She wasn't a star. She played women's sports. She played lacrosse, I believe. She played basketball. She's a team captain, good player. But she was most prominently the CEO, I think she still is, of one of the biggest accounting firms in the world, Deloitte. Okay? This is not a, this is a smart woman, obviously. CEO of one of the biggest accounting firms in the world. And she is the commissioner of the WNBA. I cannot believe this new season for the WNBA has just begun. And we're seeing this targeting from a physical play on the court. We're seeing this with comments made about her off the court, racial and other things. I cannot understand why the commissioner of the WNBA, instead of allowing the league to self-sabotage, the league should be explaining to every player, every coach, every owner, this once-in-a-generation opportunity that the WNBA has right now. It's been around for almost 30 years. And there, for whatever reason, the attention and the spotlight is on the WNBA because of one of the best players of all time, white, black, or any other color. The league should be embracing this and using this to elevate itself, elevate its teams, elevate its profile, elevate its revenue, and elevate its standing, because this happens once. I mean, there's great players today, right? But has there been another Michael Jordan? They've tried to talk about Kobe Bryant and other players, but nobody has had the impact since Michael Jordan retired, has had the same impact. You can argue about points and everything else, LeBron James, but Michael Jordan is still the gold standard. Yes, there have been great players since then. I'm not saying there haven't been. I just named several. But it was Michael Jordan, what he did on the court, that raised that team and raised that league and raised those salaries and raised those attendance figures and raised those TV ratings. For everybody that played, Kathy Engelbert, the commissioner of the WNBA, I beg you, if you haven't done this, you better do it. You seem to be a smart woman, at least on paper. Have a meeting with every team. Go personally to every team as commissioner. Sit them down in a room and explain the opportunity that these women have right now because of the Caitlin Clark effect, and explain how she is bringing new fans and new interest to this league that it's never ever come close to having before. The other team's coaches need to understand this, and the other team's players need to understand this. Caitlin Clark can help everyone in the WNBA. It will help you
raise your individual brand and profile. It will help you get more endorsements. It will help the league because more people will getting attendance. And so you will get more perks. You will start to get charter flights as opposed to flying commercial. That's been a stickling point. Well, why does Caitlin Clark get a charter flight and we don't? Because Caitlin Clark is filling up stadiums with 20,000 people a game. Caitlin Clark is making 23 million people watch a basketball game. When you do that, you'll get the charter flight. Stop being petty. Stop being jealous. And understand that this takes time, but it's going to happen. Instead of putting Caitlin Clark down, you should be embracing her. I'm not saying that you should let her run wild. No, be competitive. But be a sports person. Don't be petty. Don't be jealous. Don't bring in racism. Realize this once in a lifetime, once in a generation opportunity that's happening to the WNBA. Stop sabotaging yourself. Embrace the fact that she's bringing attention to the league. Put your jealousies aside. Don't lose your competitiveness. Don't let her have a free ride when she's on the court. But don't go out to target her. Don't try to hurt her. Don't talk about her despairingly at press conferences. Don't bring up race. That's an insult. It's silly. She hasn't been handed anything. She's earned the attention. And a black player would be the same way. Kathy Engelbert, would you go to every team and explain, I'm here, I am, not even a big basketball fan, and I see the opportunity that the WNBA has, and I'm sitting here going, what are they doing? They're killing the golden goose. You have a chance to elevate your sport. An athlete's career is very fragile. Sure, she could play for the next 10 years, but maybe she hurts a knee in another year or two, and she's out for the rest of her career. You want to make sure that while she's playing at, and while she's playing, and she's playing at this optimum level, that you take advantage of the excitement and the interest that she's creating by her talent, by her play, and promote that to get people to watch the league. So when Caitlin Clark is done playing, there will still be interest. Just like with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was an ambassador for basketball. As I said to you at the beginning of the podcast, basketball now, I believe, is almost and a tie for second with baseball. We've had Kobe Bryant's and we've had LeBron James's and Stephen Curry's and great players. And the attention has remained on the NBA for the last 25 or 30 years because of what Michael Jordan did. He brought new fans, young fans, old fans. He recruited young kids to get into basketball, and now they're adults, and they're going to tell their kids. LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Stephen Curry. Everybody says, "Oh, who's better, LeBron?" That's another discussion. But those players should be thanking. Hopefully they do. Michael Jordan. Because they wouldn't be making the billions of dollars they have made without what he did for the sport. And Caitlin Clark has that same potential. And instead of the other players and almost the league, it seems, either having a hands-off kind of, I mean, this commissioner, I don't get it. She's got like a hands-off, she's letting this go on. This pettiness, this jealousy, this racial talk, these fouls,
This is a league that has been floundering for 25 years. And that's not an opinion, that's fact. It's barely registered. Yes, there's been excitement, right? But it hasn't had the national prominence that it's had in the last 5 months. Don't lose the opportunity because you're not going to get it again. Don't kill the golden goose. Explain to these players, these young women, who might not be as mature or they might not get the big picture yet of what the Caitlin Clark effect can have for the league and then, yes, for them individually. They can benefit from it. Don't let your immediate jealousies and your immediate grudges cloud the big picture. Caitlin Clark can rise all boats for the league, for the players, for the coaches, the attendance, the TV ratings, the endorsements, all of it. The more I start to watch Caitlin Clark games, the more I notice other players who play pretty well too on the same team and on the other teams. And suddenly I say, well, that person, that Angel Reese is good. But right now, when I'm watching the Chicago Sky, I'm rooting against the Chicago Sky. I'll be honest with you. I live here in Chicago. I'm rooting against them because they're not good sportsmen. They need to change their attitude. You know, I told you about the Bad Boys, the Detroit Pistons. They had great teams, but you know what? They're known as a sulking, bad boy, dirty kind of team. Cheap shots, angry dispositions. That's what the Chicago Sky is becoming right now in this jealousy that they have for Caitlin Clark. So somebody better talk to the powers that be at the Chicago Sky to say, you know what? From a PR standpoint, you guys are not only have you have a losing record, but you're losing the fans because you're acting like a team of jealous, angry, mean players. That's not what Michael Jordan was. So as it stands right now, I'm rooting against the Sky because I think that they're not a likable team right now. They're not getting it. They could be competitive. They could be hard. They could play hard games. I'm not saying that, but it's clear on the court and off the court, there's other things going on. And they're centered around Caitlin Clark for no reason that have to do with basketball. I think the commissioner should get involved here and sit down with these teams individually, go to every team in the league and have a come to Jesus meeting and explain to them in no uncertain terms what will be tolerated, what not will be tolerated, and why they are sitting at the precipice of a renaissance for not just the WNBA, but women's professional sports. This could actually have a cascading effect for women's professional sports of all kind. I'm not overplaying this. But if the players of the WNBA become so short-sighted and so self-centered, and they destroy the Caitlin Clark effect, they're not just destroying the WNBA, which will easily fall off the map again, as we've seen it already has in its past history. But it will be a detriment to women's sports because right now the Caitlin Clark effect is not just having an attention and an effect on women's basketball professional, but on all women's sports. Everybody's taking a different look and a different perspective and giving it a chance. Whether it's been right or wrong in the past, that doesn't matter. That's gone. Look ahead. Look forward. People like me are turning their attention. I'm a sports fan. Are turning their attentions to women's basketball and women's sports.
That's huge in getting women's sports to raise their profile and be on an equal plane in terms of popularity, in terms of attendance, in terms of salaries and purses, whether it's in tennis or in golf or in soccer, in anything. We've got a professional women's league that is right now competing with men's sports in popularity. Not one-on-one yet, but the amount of eyes, the amount of tension and attention that's coming to the game can raise not just all boats in the WNBA, but can raise all boats in professional women's sports. Stop the self-sabotage. Embrace the Caitlin Clark effect and what it can do for the WNBA and for women's sports. Be smart. Realize the big picture. Don't put Caitlin Clark down because of racial, white privilege. These arguments have no validity. She's earned the attention she's got. She's bringing attention to the league. She's bringing attention to women's sports. Stop the self-sabotage and embrace this opportunity. Don't double dribble. This should be a slam dunk. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGN Radio or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 422. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.